For a country that has put innovation at the center of its growth strategy, China has a curious relationship with technology. Every day, more people in China than anywhere else in the world go to work to censor, manipulate, and police the online behavior of their fellow citizens. Censorship and propaganda are as old as the Chinese state, and yet China's efforts to control the internet have intensified since President Xi Jinping came to power in 2012. Today, even the most innocuous comment on social media can earn a visit from the authorities. But as my guest today points out, not even the Great Firewall is impenetrable. Xiao Qiang is a research scientist at the School of Information at the University of California, Berkeley, and he's one of the world's leading experts on circumventing Chinese internet censorship. I caught up with Xiao on the sidelines of the Forum 2000 Democracy Conference held in Prague in early October last year.
You'll sit on this side. Those are your headphones.
All right. So I'll speaking towards this.
This is you. Yeah.
Right into the mic. I've done some interviews in my life before, but this is far more a creative setting than some of the others. It makes me happy. I think I can do a better interview than the other settings.
So let's get right to it. There's some noise behind us, but we'll try to drown it out as we focus on the incredibly important and at times frustrating reality that is the Chinese censorship and surveillance model. So you've been following the development of China's so-called Great Firewall for many, many years now. And, you know, when it began in the late 90s, the focus, as far as I could tell, was largely on blocking Western or websites that were deemed, not in line with Communist Party policy. Today, the Great Firewall is so much more than that. So let's start, if we could, with an overview of digital censorship and surveillance in China today. What is the firewall and how does it work?
Sure. Great Firewall, of course, is a nickname that people gave to the China censorship mechanism since the internet age. It also has a specific target of this word, which is not a firewall, but it is a filtering system that on the national gateways of the internet in the Chinese border, internet border, or cyber border, that actively monitoring and filtering the traffic, internet traffic from China to outside of the world and vice versa. So in the broader sense, we use this word China's Great Firewall to describe the entire set of the systematic institutional and logistical effort, computing effort, that China control the internet, censorship, propaganda, surveillance, etc., particularly the censorship as surveillance. Mm. But in the narrow sense, we can also refer to that specific software and hardware and the human system that filtering the traffic between China and the rest of the world.
I mean, does it extend to people as well? The idea that I think most people have is that we're talking about technology only, but you've written about the 50 Cent Army and millions of people that are actively seeking to engage with and change narratives online. So do you lump that into your definition of this kind of idea of a great firewall, or is that going a bit in a different direction?
Well, let's talk about generally the censorship and the surveillance of the Chinese totalitarian state. This, of course, this is nothing new. The control of information, suppressing the people's freedom of expression, and including influencing and control the public opinion in China. This has been always as a dictatorship state. But since the digital technology, particularly internet, being introduced in China since middle 90s, there is certainly a rising new hope from civil society that now people has a new space can speak out much more freely than before, and then they have this fantastic new technology technology can coordinate their actions and giving them the unprecedented opportunity to speak up. All of them above are true, and then they met to the state effort, the grandiose effort from legal, political, administrative, through the business, to trying to crack down on that cyber public sphere ever since then. So there's an evolution of it. The specific piece of Great Firewall, which is filtering the information between China to the outside, is a one component of the entire system. The, like the 50 cent army, the online censorship, the deleting of the posts, the keyword filtering, these are the sort of the domestically controlling the information space effort. In addition to that, there is a set of the software and hardware on the cyber border to filtering the information. And I rather focus on that as a great firewall in the narrow sense, but a censorship and a surveillance state set up in the general term.
Okay. You recently wrote a piece in the Washington Post in which you described in your opening this story of a former lawyer in Shandong province, Zhou Baowei. And for me, it really kind of illustrates the lengths to which China will go to defend the party line in cyberspace. And tell us a little bit about that case, what Zhou said, what the authorities did, and is this normal?
This is actually a new norm, that since the internet came into China from mid-90s, and gradually there's the blogs, there's the microblogs, and there's the internet forums, despite all the government effort of censorship, the arresting people, and sort of hiring the online, what we call the 15th Army, essentially to just spin the government lines, the rise of the public opinion inside of China, including a lot of our direct critics to the government, it has been a phenomenon all the way until 2011. The government was so worried about this new rise of the public opinion and the ideologically lost control of the Chinese population. So as soon as the new president Xi Jinping came in power, the new wave of campaign to crack down on the internet speech is unprecedented. That brought the China's internet public sphere to the new norm, which is even sarcastically questioning some official promoted figure become a crime.
And so people who haven't maybe read your story or are aware of this specific case, just walk us through it.
It was the official media was promoting this one particular individual who is an engineer, actually, died not too long ago, that his story, according to official media, was that he was so dedicated to the state national defense project, essentially the nuclear weapon program, nuclear submarine program, that because the top secret, he never told his parents for 30 years. Yeah, what he was really doing, and couldn't see them. But then one of the reader simply just on his own social media said, well, but that kind of so-called patriotic effort is really demoralizing because think of her for his parents.
And the reader is Zhou Baowei.
Yeah, Zhou Baowei is the reader, right? So he's questioning the moral meaning of that story.
Right.
But that itself already got him in trouble. That's how the today's Chinese censorship, what I call the new norm, is that those party lines, including the so-called models or the figures they are promoting, they're not allowed the negative critics. Mm. Yeah, if you do, and the police will find you. And that is how scary it is.
And the police did find him in this case, right?
That's right, because online everybody has a digital trace, and Chinese internet police has capacity pretty much to find anyone when they want to.
And this guy was in his 50s or 60s, I don't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But what was the punishment? It was something like $70 fine? Or
right, but think about what his crime. His crime is just questioning whether that is an ethical behavior to not telling your parents what to do for 30 years.
So that story that you just described, I mean, that aggressive response leaves the impression for people who are in the West or outside of China to think that digital censorship in China is omnipotent and impenetrable. But that's not really the case. I mean, much of your work focuses on helping users inside China jump out or over the firewall. Let's get down to specifics and tell us how you do that. How do you go about your work?
Right. That's only one set of stories. All seeing states are trying to preserving their power and the control and with the technical capacity to do it. But on the other side is the internet users, which in China is increasingly large, right? The 100 million people on internet today. They have their say and they have their opinion to express and they have their need to coordinate actions, not only on the normal social, cultural, commercial activities, but politically as well. So there's always this resistance and repression, the dynamics on the Chinese internet. The result of that is an endless creativity, satire, and sometimes direct confrontation of activities never stop. Chinese internet is never a dull place in a second, including on the narrow sense of Great Firewall. Even they are filtering hundreds of thousands of content websites outside of China. But same time, there are tens of millions of Chinese people are using VPN or other technology to get around that particular censorship and still access to those information that they're not supposed to access.
Mm-hmm. And is part of your work helping people access VPNs that function? Because I mean, China has taken an aggressive stance on trying to shut down these virtual tunnels.
Yes, but they cannot completely shut them down because the commercial needs of those tunnels. Every companies need to communicate to their headquarters outside of China. Then they need those kind of VPNs to do so. If you really cut off all the VPNs, none of those foreign companies can function inside of China. And that will be devastating for Chinese economy. My work, among other things, are doing some innovative research on what kind of innovation technology can help the people circumvent Great Firewall. Because even you trying to get around it, the technology of the sensor can track you and block your proxy. Then what we were doing, one of our technology, is to hiding the circumvention channel behind of the large cloud computing services, such as Amazon or Google or the Microsoft Azure cloud services. So if the sensor wants to block the circumvention channel, they have to block the entire domain name, which is like entire Amazon or entire Google. And that makes the authority, the censorship that sensor stop because that will bring too much collateral damage for them. This technology has been working in the last 5 years until Google and Amazon now announced that they are no more supporting such use of their services. Mm-hmm. So now the circumventors have to find other ways to get around Great Firewall.
But the Chinese innovation state has a tradition of creating its own versions of things. I mean, Weibo, WeChat are alternatives to Western social media products. So does the Chinese state really need this Western technology?
Well, Chinese state doesn't really need it. I mean, it's needed in the sense of many of those technologies that started from Silicon Valley and the West, including internet itself, but China quickly adopted, and those technologies are easy to be sort of copycatted inside of China. But then not only a great firewall play a role of the censorship and filtering information, it's also play a role on the commercial sort of protectionism that making those user-generated content type of a company such as Facebook and Google, Twitter, impossible to compete with the local Chinese companies. They had their market because they get the trust from the government, they got the lesson to occupy the entire Chinese market. And this is a very large market. As a matter of fact, it's the largest internet market in the world. Therefore, those Chinese companies are growing in that protection censorship space. Not only are they helping the state to censor and to do the surveillance job, but it's also commercially they're very successful. Technically, they're becoming more and more dynamic and innovative. And the Chinese technology, especially today with so much user data and without the privacy protection, then those companies are ahead of the Western companies such as Google or Amazon in terms of on the side of the big data and artificial intelligence, face recognition and voice recognition, those technologies. So the new sort of field is that within the Great Firewall, there is a very dynamic China's internet industry, very innovative, but same time, very repressive, because they are the component of the state repressive and surveillance machine.
You know, one recent scholar suggested that where China is moving to is governance by algorithm, and the idea that artificial intelligence can not only surveil and monitor, but can also influence and push people's attitudes into a certain direction. This idea of the social credit system, which I want you to talk about, seems beyond Orwellian. This is not only about knowing what people are doing and thinking, but influencing behaviors before people actually even make them. I think there's a Tom Cruise movie that's along a similar lines. This is no longer science fiction.
No, it's a reality in China, and China is well on its way to such a level of the control of the society. We were talking about the online sort of resistance behavior, the people's internet users' creativity, and also the evolution of the technology. As I said at the beginning, we all see internet giving everybody voices and empowering the ordinary users and giving people capacity to coordinate the collective action. So all these are the hope to top a authoritarian regime, a dictatorship. But with the technology developed, we see the other side is winning, because at the age of Internet of Things, cloud computing, big data, and artificial intelligence, what happens is the big corporation, including the state, such as particularly like a dictator state like China, that will gain so much power through this technology over the individual users. And the power you mentioned, that it's not only just know everything, but shape people's behavior. The responsiveness of those algorithms and the preciseness of predicting their future behavior are all sort of encompassing in today's China society. There are 800 million people using mobile phones, smartphones in China. As soon as you're on the mobile phone and using Chinese chatting program called WeChat, and using WeChat to pay and using their geolocations, then your digital trace is entirely in the company's hand and in the Chinese state hand. And they can use this to influence your behavior in every sense, and can predict in highly precise ways crowd behaviors. That's on top of that facial recognition technology, the surveillance cameras that all over the Chinese city and now going to the every Chinese village within the next decade. Those and the algorithm behind of those large data set, those things is happening in other states too, countries too. But China, that without privacy, without the law protect the limit of a state capacity, and every those large companies work for the state on those aspects, making China is particularly not only capable of control, but because of those data, those algorithms are particularly accurate, and those technology are superior than the same type of technology, artificial intelligence in Western countries, is simply because you don't have so much user data to train your algorithm.
I want to ask you about the complicity of Western companies. You've said that if Google in particular goes back into China and reverses a decision from 2010 to not block search results, in other words, allows China the tools to block certain pieces of content, and especially news content, you said that this would have a, quote, direct impact on press freedom around the world. I wonder if you could explain that. Why around the world?
Well, first of all, since Google is such a powerful company, it has the ripple effect. But let me go back to the Google's early decisions into China and then pull out of China. At the time, internet was playing a sort of more positive role to the expanding the information space and the internet users' capacity to express themselves, to access information. And I was supporting Google inter China, and if they can hold their principle together, and even they have to do certain things that are following the Chinese government, the rule, but still have a generally more positive impact to help the information flow inside of China. But 10 years later, situation is very different. Now this old capacity of controlling data and keep all the user data is inside of China. This is called cyber sovereignty law that in China established, makes that any company, including Google, if they go to China, they are only the component of that repressive apparatus rather than expanding the civic freedom. So in this case, Google's effort to go to China only because they want to have access of that piece of market, and no more has a positive impact in terms of expanding the information freedom for Chinese people. Then Google also lost its special brand that sort of under social responsibility across the world, that they can say no to China, they can say no to censorship, they're innovative, and holding the internet freedom is one of their corporate responsibilities. They will lose all of that by surrender to the Chinese censorship.
By extension, then, other non-free or totalitarian or authoritarian regimes might seem
They'll do the same. Yeah. Right, they'll do exactly the same.
Mm, right, okay. So you've written two pieces for us, one in 1999, I believe, and one in 2003. Your most recent one, a lot has changed since then. The headline that we gave it was China's Virtual Revolution. And at that time, the Great Firewall and China's censorship abilities were just a few years old. And you optimistically predicted that China's netizens would, quote, guide the transformation of society and determine the country's future. I wonder if you still believe that.
Well, in the long term, I still believe that. But in the immediate concern, I actually see the opposite side is true, which is that the state has gained so much more power in the new generation of technology, meaning the cloud computing, artificial intelligence, and big data, that China's on its way to build a first digital totalitarian state instead of simply being overthrown because of the internet capacity for the freedom of expression and citizens' capability to act. That's we are facing a new challenge. Those new technologies are helping the ruling elites far more than helping the individual users. That doesn't make me lose the faith of the Chinese people and the future of the Chinese state democratic transition, simply because the legitimacy of the regime is still in question. They control it. They have capacity to suppress it. But they don't have a real capacity to convince the Chinese people that the authoritarian rule is really legitimate and can functioning to serve the justice and deliver the citizen needs of the rising needs of the Chinese population.
Yeah, I mean, in some of your other pieces for other organizations, you've talked about this kind of, you know, this quiet army of millions of quote, revolutionaries, people that you're talking about, that are there, that are talking loudly amongst themselves.
And they still do.
Right, yeah. Right. And so the revolution might still be coming, but we have to push the deadline out.
Well, we're fighting a new powerful opponent, yes.
Right. Okay. Well, I think that is a good, if not sobering, place to leave the conversation. Xiao, thank you so much for joining us here in Prague on the sidelines of Forum 2000. It was very enlightening to speak to you today.
Well, thank you.
That was Xiao Qiang, a research scientist at the School of Information at the University of California, Berkeley, and director of the school's Counterpower Lab. We spoke on the sidelines of the Forum 2000 Democracy Conference in Prague in early October 2018. That's all for this episode. Thanks for listening. Be sure to rate and review our podcast and subscribe on SoundCloud, Stitcher, and iTunes. Until next time, I'm Greg Bruno.